It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, the Wisconsin Assembly passed a bill earlier this month that would end the moratorium on new nuclear power plants in Wisconsin. We'll get two perspectives on that issue.
First, the Iowa caucuses are 5 days away, and it remains a tight race between Cruz and Trump and Sanders and Clinton. Last night brought a dramatic twist to the Republican side, with Donald Trump saying that he's not going to attend the final debate before the caucus because of a feud with the host Megyn Kelly and the Fox Network in general. He's holding his own event instead.
On the Democratic side, the race has tightened in Iowa between Clinton and Sanders. Time now for our weekly look at the latest in national politics with senior political writer and analyst for 538, Harry Enten. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, before we get to these snowball fights in Iowa, I understand you had a bit of snow in your neck of the woods, Harry. How hard were you hit?
Well, New York City, Central Park recorded 26.8 inches of snow. JFK Airport, a little over 30 inches of snow. New York City never shuts down, but they closed the roads down on Saturday night, but they did reopen them on Sunday. It was the second largest storm ever to hit Central Park in recorded history.
And sometimes here in Wisconsin, when they report on big snowfall elsewhere in the country, we say, oh, that's no big deal. That's a lot of snow wherever you are. So, and you wrote a piece about what this tells us about predicting snowfall, and you've been watching that sort of statistical stuff. What do we learn? Are we doing a good job?
Well, yes and no. The models, most of the models in New York City, we were right at the northern edge of the snow, and the models suggested, most of them, that the heaviest snow would stay just to the south of New York. But one model, in fact, suggested that New York City would get into the heavy snow. And, you know, kind of putting that into a political context in some sort of way or comparing it to politics, I think it shows how important it is that we talk in probabilities, not saying this won't happen, but rather saying there's a low chance of something happening. And I think that that's a lesson that consistently we learn from weather, is that you never quite know when you're going to have that black swan event, when something truly unique is about to take place.
And we're going to go from the snowstorm to a political storm, a bit of one anyway, with Donald Trump saying, against all odds, it seems unlikely, but he's saying he's going to sit out the debate tomorrow night, partly because of Megyn Kelly, partly because of Fox News in general. What do you make of that? What's going on there?
You know, I have long since gotten past the point of trying to figure Donald Trump out. I've also gotten long since the point of doubting Donald Trump. Every single time one of us in the media doubts Donald Trump, he manages to go up in the polls. But if I were Trump, I think what's really going on here is I think he recognizes that he's risen in the polls the past couple of weeks. The majority of the polls coming out of Iowa right now show him with a small lead. So why should he enter a debate in which he'll get attacked from all sides and potentially lose support in Iowa when he can try and freeze the race exactly where it is? Obviously, the downside is, if he's not there, maybe people think, oh, he's a crybaby. He doesn't want to have to take on Megyn Kelly. But clearly he's making the bet that most people will not care about that. Rather, they'll just recognize that he didn't make any mistakes on the debate stage.
Well, he won't be there on the debate stage. Will the other candidates be free to take pot shots at him? Could that backfire on them if he's not there to defend himself? We're in uncharted territory here.
It's exactly right. You know, I fully expect the other candidates will take shots at him. But there's a question of how many people actually tune in, because there's a belief out there that a good percentage of the increase that we've seen in the debate audience on the Republican side is because Donald Trump is there. And Trump is basically saying, you know what, if I'm not there, no one's going to be watching anyway. So what's the big deal?
Do you think this feud is genuine? Does this genuinely arise from feelings of, you know, being mistreated by Fox News? Or is there a sense that this is manufactured at all?
I think that there's a little bit of both. I mean, Trump is supposedly going on Bill O'Reilly tonight. So, you know, I don't know how much of it is truly against Fox News, how much of it is truly against Megyn Kelly. How much of it is just Trump having an ego and saying, if I can't have things my way, then you're not going to get anything at all. Trump is a fascinating figure, both politically and non-politically, and trying exactly to understand what's going through his mind is something that is well above my pay grade.
Well, let's look at historical data here. What's happened in the past when leading primary candidates have dropped out of Iowa debates over a Twitter feud 1 week before the primary? Oh, no, wait. We don't have any precedent to work with here, do we?
You know, the only thing I really can sort of think about that may be somewhat similar to this is in 1980, not even in a, well, there was a primary thing with Reagan, but the one I'm specifically thinking of is when incumbent President Jimmy Carter refused to debate Ronald Reagan and John Anderson in September of that year because he didn't want to debate with Anderson being on the stage as well. And that really didn't help Carter very much. I'm not sure how much it hurt him as much as a bad debate performance in late October did. But I would say not being there is not as bad as being there and doing poorly.
We're talking to Harry Enten right now, senior political writer and analyst for 538. Does it seem at all strange that this is the choice that he's made, Donald Trump, on the eve, more or less, of the Iowa caucus? Doesn't he want to be out there? Is this going to influence anything that happens on Monday?
You know, yes and no. He's going to be holding his own event separately. I wouldn't be shocked if either CNN and or MSNBC cover that event while Fox has the debate going. But again, even though he's not on the debate stage, all we're talking about is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has managed to command so much media attention, so much more than any of the other candidates, even though his net favorability rating in the state of Iowa among Republicans is lower than Ted Cruz's, is lower than Marco Rubio's, is lower than Ben Carson's, yet he has been able to have all of this media attention. And I think it's just a genius play if he wants to keep the media on him. I'm not showing up at the debate. He's gotten more media from that than he probably otherwise would have.
I want to throw this out to our listeners, by the way, at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this decision, the front runner, Donald Trump, on the Republican side, not going to the last debate before the Iowa caucus? Call in with your reaction, 800-642-1234. Here, you mentioned the John Anderson race in 1980. That just jogged my memory. Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of where you are right now, New York City, saying, depending on how this all shapes out, meaning maybe if it's a Trump-Sanders general election, hey, maybe I get into the race, another billionaire in the race, and maybe I have a shot. Do you think that's a realistic possibility? What would that do to a race?
Well, you know, I think that there are a few things going on that you kind of went through. Number one, he probably only enters if both Trump and Sanders win the nomination. At this point, Trump winning the nomination doesn't seem so far-fetched. Sanders is still a little bit far-fetched, but let's say he does get that. Bloomberg has one thing going for him that pretty much no other candidate could, and that is, as a third party or an independent candidate, he will spend upwards of $1 billion, perhaps more so than that, on the campaign. That's a plus. The real problem for him, to be honest, is that the way he is positioned on the issues is not something that I think really appeals to most of America. He's socially liberal. Well, he's more economically conservative. If Trump has taught us anything, in fact, that's the opposite of what people like. They like someone who's a little more socially conservative while more economically liberal. Bloomberg also doesn't have much of a personality. I mean, Trump, you know, will be bombastic. Michael Bloomberg is a technocrat. It seems like a nice guy from everything. You know, I've met him in person, but in reality, there's not really a lot there. I would be very skeptical of that. But you know what? Throw $1 billion of ads on the air, who knows what might happen.
And Harry, Monday is kind of when the rubber meets the road, when we find out whether at least some of Donald Trump's poll numbers have been inflated or not. Do you have any predictions for what's going to happen on Monday?
Well, you know, a very interesting poll came out today from Monmouth University, which basically suggested that Donald Trump wins this caucus the higher the turnout is. And if you can get a higher turnout than we've ever had for a caucus, he probably wins. If, however, the turnout is the same as it was 4 years ago for the Republican caucus, it looks like a toss-up. So my guess, in all honesty, based, you know, the 538 sort of conventional wisdom, is probably that the idea that this is going to have a much higher turnout than normal is not going to come to fruition. But even if it's the same turnout than it was as it was 4 years ago, Trump still has a very good shot of winning this thing.
We'll go to a caller now. We've got Dan on the line in Tripoli. Dan, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I think Trump is smart to stay away from the debate. I don't think he has anything to prove. And I really think he'd be debating on a different level than the mainstream Republican candidates are. Trump has enunciated what he, in broad sweeps, what he wants to do. I think all he has to do is stand pat on that and let the voters make up their minds.
Dan, thanks a lot for that call. So, yeah, that's the thing, the voters making up their minds there. Harry, do you agree with Dan? It's a smart move to just kind of let it ride at this point?
You know, if you're leading in the state, and most of the polls show you leading in the state, why should you give your opponents a chance to bring you down a peg or two? The news will be that he sat out the debate, not that he made some sort of boneheaded error or one of his opponents made him look foolish. Instead, it's going to be of him not being there, but he'll be on plenty of television anyway. I don't necessarily see this as a poor move. It could end up being so, but at this point, we're open as to whether or not this will be a bad move.
We're talking to Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538, looking at the latest in national politics, including tomorrow night's Republican debate, absent the Republican frontrunner, and the Iowa caucuses of both parties coming up on Monday.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of Donald Trump's decision not to attend the final debate before the caucuses? And what are your thoughts about the upcoming caucuses? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation now with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538, looking at the latest in national politics and that upcoming Iowa caucus.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Who do you think will win the caucuses? And what do you make of Donald Trump's debate boycott? Call 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Another caller now. Bob is with us in Oshkosh. Bob, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing? Hey, you know what I think is that the Oregon standoff took place. Donald Trump's fundamental base is the extreme right wing. And basically he doesn't want to take a stand because he doesn't want to irritate his potential base. He doesn't know really, he's kind of caught. He doesn't know what to say. Thanks.
Bob, thanks a lot for that call. Harry, is Donald Trump's base the extreme right wing, as Bob says?
You know, this is a very interesting situation, and I guess extreme could be defined in many different ways. What we do know from the polls is the people who tend to support Trump, in fact, would not call themselves very conservative. They may be, a number of them may be members, or they would call themselves affiliated with the Tea Party. But rather, what they really are, they tend to be lower class white voters who are angry with what's going on. Now, I'm not sure whether or not that necessarily correlates well with the folks out in Oregon, but I will say that he does tend to do well among those who are very, very angry with the government, with the way things are going. But I'm not necessarily sure I would call them extremely conservative. Rather, I would just say that they are extreme in some of their positions, but perhaps not in others of them.
Where does that position Donald Trump with, quote-unquote, establishment Republicans then?
Well, this has been one of the most fascinating things of this campaign, at least over the last few weeks, is where, you know, Chuck Grassley went to one of Trump's campaign rallies. Terry Branstad, who's the governor of Iowa, basically said, don't vote for Ted Cruz, but didn't say anything about not voting for Donald Trump. That's partly because they really just hate Ted Cruz. I'm not sure if it's nearly as much of an embrace of Trump, but they really haven't gone out of their way to go after him. So, I mean, Trump is certainly not part of what I would think most of us would call the establishment, but he certainly doesn't seem to be as disliked by them as Ted Cruz is.
Now, let's talk about the establishment wing. Who do they have their chips on, if anybody at this point? Jeb Bush, a lot of money went his way. Some life in the polls in New Hampshire for him, I gather. Marco Rubio still not getting the traction people thought he would. Kasich? I don't know. Who are they looking at to emerge here?
What we would call the establishment lane, the whole thing is a mess. You know, in New Hampshire, you have Kasich, you have Christie, you have Bush, you have Rubio. They're all between, say, 7 or 8% and 15% of the vote. None of them are breaking out. And part of that may be because Rubio probably has the best chance of breaking out among them. But if you look at Rubio's record, he tends to be far more conservative than the average person in the Congress in D.C. His voting record tends to not align with party leadership as often. They probably want to see if someone like a Bush could break out in New Hampshire, and not just in one poll or two polls that includes an internal poll of his, but a more, you know, really a few reputable pollsters. So they're really split at this point. My guess is Rubio has the best chance of breaking out, but this election, best guesses haven't always gone the way that they should.
Let's leave the Republicans and Donald Trump for a moment. Talk about the Democratic side of things. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, how are they positioned right now as we move forward? Are we in the middle of a Sanders surge?
Well, this is an interesting thing. I guess it depends how you define surge, over what time period. It's very clear looking at the polls in Iowa, pretty much anywhere, as a matter of fact. If you look between, say, the December 25th and then January 5th, there was something that happened, and Sanders went right up in the polls, climbed a number of percentage points. But over the last about 2 weeks, it seems like it has leveled out. You know, we have a forecast at 538, and basically Clinton has maintained a lead in the state of Iowa, enough of a lead that makes her the favorite, not enough of a lead that eliminates Bernie Sanders' chance of winning, but she has maintained a lead in the average of polls, and the polls that have tended to show Sanders surges are done by a methodology where they call up random people who they don't necessarily know if they're a registered voter or not. They ask him, but that technique hasn't tended to be the best in the past. The polls with the better techniques have continued to show a small but sustained Clinton lead in Iowa.
I saw a chart of support for those two, Sanders and Clinton, by age range. I don't remember if it was from you all at 538 or not. Young voters, boom, the 70-something-year-old guy, Bernie Sanders. They love him. And then it slants down from there, and Hillary Clinton is the exact opposite. Younger voters, not so sure. The older you get, the more they support her. What do you make of that?
Yeah, this is a very interesting thing that's going on here. I think that there are a number of things that are happening. One, the younger voters on the Democratic side tend to be more liberal than the older voters. So obviously they're going to go with the more liberal candidate in Bernie Sanders. I think the other thing that's going on is younger voters tend to be more anti-establishment than older voters. So, of course, they're going to go with Bernie Sanders, who's a guy who you can say a lot of things about him, but certainly outsider is a word that rings right and true to me. But, you know, it has been a major split. You know, if you look at the 18 to 29-year-olds, Sanders leads by upwards 50 percentage points plus, depending on the poll. And then you might get the exact same split but opposite for Clinton among those 65 and older. But that's a split that I think Clinton's more than willing to go with going into an Iowa caucus where those older voters are more reliable, tend to be better spread out, which is good for the way that they count the delegates on caucus night. That probably might even give her a little bit more of an edge. It's a very technical thing that they're going through, but you'd much rather have support spread out throughout the regions of Iowa, while Sanders' support tends to be more located in college towns, and that may mean that the polls overestimate how many delegates he may actually get on caucus night.
We're talking national politics right now with Harry Enten from 538. And looking at Sanders, early on he was almost seen as this single-issue candidate. He wanted to talk income inequality, and all roads kind of led to Rome. How has that developed?
You know, to be honest, I mean, he certainly has, you know, spoken out more about foreign policy, but the focus of his campaign continues to be income inequality. That is the thing that I believe drives him. Again, he's trying to spread out. He's talking more about issues that affect non-white voters. But at the end of the day, it really is The corporations, you know, tend to be the things, and he likes to bring it back to that whenever he's debating, whenever he's talking about things. That's where he feels most comfortable.
Harry, this is going to be the last time we talk to you before the Iowa caucuses. You wrote a piece about how reliable polls are for something like the Iowa caucuses, for these smaller samples, these smaller states. There's more chaos. How much can we take the polls that are out there now and read them and feel like, yeah, on Wednesday, we know what's going to happen on Monday?
You know, I think what we can say is that we're pretty sure that Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders will finish 1-2 on the Democratic side, or 2-1. Martin O'Malley really has no chance. Probably the same thing on the Republican side with Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. But the order of which they finish and whether or not Marco Rubio perhaps ends up as a strong third place versus a weak third place, those we're not so sure about. We can't be exactly sure who's going to be 1-2 and how strong Rubio's going to finish up, but we're fairly sure that it's going to be 1-2, either Cruz and Trump or Sanders and Clinton on the Democratic side and Rubio in third place on the Republican side.
So traditionally, looking at who comes out the victor after Monday from the Iowa caucus, how unstoppable does that person become?
It depends how well they're set up in New Hampshire, how well they're set up in later states. You know, John Kerry, for instance, in 2004 won the Iowa caucus and then was from next door to New Hampshire and Massachusetts and ramshot the entire field. But then, of course, last time Santorum won in Iowa, and then 4 years prior to that, Huckabee won in Iowa, and they weren't able to do anything in New Hampshire. They weren't able to go on and win the nomination. If Clinton wins in Iowa, her chances of winning the nomination are pretty much 100%. If Trump wins in Iowa, I think his chances of winning the nomination also go up significantly. But if Cruz were to win in Iowa, there's still some questions over whether or not he can win support in the Northeast in states that don't have a high evangelical base.
Let's bring on one more caller. Bring us full circle here. I think we've got Ray on the line in Stevens Point. Ray, hi.
Hi. Trump has assured himself that he will control all the media after the debate, because being not at the debate, after the debate, every media outlet is going to be open to Trump telling them, asking him questions about what he thought about every bit of criticism he may have received during the debate.
Ray, thanks a lot for the call. And Harry, that's been a lot of the commentary now that he's baffled people, but Donald Trump ultimately has played the media like a secondhand fiddle.
That's exactly right. He is. His support is largely driven by the fact that he's able to concentrate media on him, and this move assures it. But, of course, we'll see. Maybe this time he's been too smart for himself. We'll find out on Monday.
Well, Harry, I remember we talked to you several months ago, and we talked about Donald Trump emerging, and you said, are you not entertained? Is it still entertaining? How are you feeling about this candidacy right now?
I mean, I still wake up and not sure what Donald Trump is going to do, but ask me again after Monday when if he's won that caucus, and we'll see if I'm still entertained by a man who has never held political office and doesn't really seem and has a somewhat of a policy platform, but certainly not as detailed as people were used to seeing winning Iowa caucuses or winning primary contests. But so far, I mean, it's still the strangest election season I've ever seen.
All right, we'll check in next week. Harry, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That was Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538, talking about the latest in national politics and the run-up to the Iowa caucus.